In addition to the many analytical applications of the polarographic method, it is also widely used in coordination chemistry, that is, in studies designed to determine the composition of metal ion complexes in solution and to understand the nature of their electrode reactions. The shape of a classical polarographic wave contains information about the chemistry of the species responsible for the wave. By shape is meant the precise way in which the current changes with potential in the rising portion of the wave. For those cases where the rate of electron transfer between the reactant and the electrode is sufficiently rapid, the Nernst equation governs the concentration of the reactant and product at the electrode surface, and the shape of the wave is given by equation H23, which in fact is identical to equation A17, which was derived in section A by means of a static diffusion layer model. The form of equation H23 with the logarithmic dependence of the potential on the current leads to an S-shaped current potential relationship as shown in figure H24, a polarographic wave shown without the current fluctuations. I sub D is the diffusion current corresponding to the plateau in the current potential curve where the current becomes independent of the potential. And when the current is equal to one half of the diffusion current, the logarithmic term in equation H23 disappears, so the corresponding potential has a special significance. The so-called half-wave potential, the value of the potential at the point at which the current is equal to one half of the diffusion limited current. And equation H25 reminds you of the parameters which determine the value of the half-wave potential. It comes very near to the standard or formal potential for the half-reaction proceeding at the electrode. The second term in equation H25, involving the diffusion coefficients of the oxidized and reduced halves of the reactant, is usually quite small because the diffusion coefficients of the two forms are rarely very different. Another way of analyzing the shapes of polarographic waves is by means of the plot shown in figure H26, where the potential of the dropping electrode is plotted versus the logarithmic term appearing on the right-hand side of equation H16. Such plots produce straight lines, as shown in figure H26, and the slope of the line is equal to RT over NF for Nernst and electrode reactions. For reactions which do not adhere to the Nernst equation, the slope of the plot shown in figure H26 usually exceeds RT over NF. And a standard first step in analyzing the shape of a polarographic wave is to make a plot such as the one in figure H26 and to inspect both its linearity and its slope to determine whether or not an electrode reaction obeys the Nernst equation. When the electrode reaction being studied involves a metal ion complex rather than a simple aqua ion, the analysis of the wave shape is a little more involved. Reaction H27 shows the equilibrium which might be involved in a solution containing a metal ion, M, and a complexing agent, X minus, which react with each other to form a metal ion complex, MX sub P, with an equilibrium constant, K sub MXP. The electrode reaction in solutions containing an excess of the complexing agent would involve a reduction of the metal ion complex, as shown in equation H28. The metal ion complex is reduced to the metal amalgam, and P of the coordinated ligands, X minus, are set free. The wave equation giving the shape of the polarographic wave for metal ion complexes is written in H29, and you see it's identical with the wave equation given before, H23. The only difference in the case of the metal ion complex is in the half-wave potential. In the case of a metal ion complex, the value of E1/2 in equation H29 is given by equation H30. And you see that it involves many more terms than does the expression for E1/2 given in H25. The terms on the right-hand side of equation H30 are first, the standard or formal potential for the metal ion metal amalgam couple, then the usual term involving the ratio of the diffusion coefficients for the reactant and product half of the reaction. And then there follow two more terms, one involving the logarithm of the equilibrium constant for the formation of the metal ion complex, and another involving the logarithm of the concentration of the free ligand, which reacts with the metal ion to form the complex. Equation H30 will be obeyed under conditions where the concentration of the uncomplexed metal ion is much lower than that in the complex form. That is, in the presence of a large excess of the complex-forming ligand. And for cases where the polarographic waves obtained yield linear plots with slopes of RT over NF when analyzed as in figure H26, that is, for Nernstein systems. The properties of the half-wave potential exposed in equation H30 can be exploited to learn something about the coordination chemistry of the reactant. First of all, we can evaluate little p, the number of ligands attached to the metal ion in the predominant form of the complex. As shown in equation H31, when the concentration of the complex-forming ligand is very much greater than the total concentration of metal present, then the change in half-wave potential produced by changes in the concentration of the complexing agent is simply related to the number of ligands attached to the metal. Plots of the half-wave potential versus the logarithm of the concentration of the complexing agent should be linear, as indicated in figure H32, with a slope equal to RT over NF times P. The value of P can be obtained from such plots. As an example of this application of classical polarography, consider the reduction of cadmium ion from solutions containing an excess of the bidentate ligand ethylene diamine, abbreviated EN. The electrode reaction involves the reduction of cadmium ion by two electrons to form cadmium amalgam, and P molecules of ethylene diamine are liberated when this reaction proceeds, as shown in equation H33. The N value for the electrode reaction is known to be 2, and a plot of the half-wave potential versus the logarithm of the concentration of ethylene diamine in the range from 1/10 to 2 molar gives a linear plot similar to the one in figure H32, and the plot has a slope of 1.5 times RT over F. It follows, therefore, that P, the number of ethylene diamine molecules bound to the cation in the complex, is 3. This approach is a general one and can be used to deduce the primary stoichiometry of metal ion complexes so long as the two essential requirements for the application of the procedure are met, namely that the electrode reaction adheres to the Nernst equation during the recording of the polarogram and that only a single metal ion complex is present in significant concentrations. If a series of metal ion complexes is present with various p values, then a plot such as the one shown in H32 may still give a straight line, but the slope will be a non-integral multiple of RT over NF, and we may conclude that a single metal ion complex species that predominates over all the others is not present under the conditions of the experiment. Half-wave potentials for polarograms of metal ion complexes are also commonly measured in order to evaluate the equilibrium constant for the formation of the complex. If we record a polarogram for a metal ion in the absence of any complexing ligand, the electrode reaction will be given by H34, and the half-wave potential for the uncomplexed metal ion will obey equation H35. Now, if we add an excess of a complexing ligand to the solution of the free metal ion and record the polarogram again, a new half-wave potential will result, which, as we have just seen, should obey equation H30. And the difference between these two half-wave potentials is given in equation H36, from which it is clear how to evaluate the equilibrium constant for the formation of the complex. If we know the ratio of the diffusion coefficients and the number of ligands attached to the predominant metal complex, P, as well as the concentration of the ligand at which the half-wave potential for the metal ion complex was measured, every term in equation H36 except the term involving the equilibrium constant is known, so it can be evaluated. The required diffusion current ratio can be evaluated quite simply from the ratio of the diffusion currents for the polarogram of the free metal ion to that for its metal ion complex. Equation H37, which follows from equation H10, expresses this result. We also need to know the number of ligands present in the complex. But as equation H38 reminds us, P can be evaluated from the dependence of the half-wave potentials measured in the presence of the complexing ligand on the concentration of the ligand. We saw how to do that in figure H32. So, the difference between the half-wave potential of the free metal ion and its complex ion provides all the information necessary to evaluate the equilibrium constant for the formation of the metal ion complex. Equation H39 implies as much. This method of evaluating equilibrium constants is widely used in coordination chemistry. The analysis becomes somewhat more complicated when more than one predominant complex has to be considered, but the principles are much the same. Although this discussion has concentrated on the ways in which classical polarographic measurements can be exploited in coordination chemistry, it would be erroneous to leave the impression that the same kind of information could not also be obtained by means of most of the other electroanalytical techniques we've described earlier. The reasons that classical polarography has been used so extensively in coordination chemistry are the fact that it was invented and described much earlier than most of the other techniques, and it was therefore simply available. A second reason for its continued popularity is that polarographic half-wave potentials can be evaluated precisely when very small currents are passing, that is, in dilute solutions of reactants, and with relatively long observation times, that is, with drop times of several seconds. Both of these features allow classical polarography to be successfully employed to study systems which can begin to show significant deviations from the Nernst equation when inspected with techniques such as cyclic voltammetry or chronopotentiometry. In a sense, polarography is a gentler probe which allows useful information to be extracted while perturbing a reacting system less severely from its equilibrium position. You may wish to pause at this point and go over the figures and equations from H27 to H39 once more to be sure you understand the essential principles involved in the polarographic measurement of equilibrium constants for complex metal ions. A final feature of classic DC polarograms worth knowing about has to do with what are called kinetic currents. In circumstances such as those indicated in equations H40 and H41, where there are two forms of the oxidized half of a half reaction, which are in chemical equilibrium, and only the second of the two oxidized species is reducible, or if the second species is more easily reduced than the first, split waves can occur in the recorded polarogram, as indicated in figure H42. The first wave, with a current labeled I sub K, corresponds to a kinetically limited current. The current on this plateau is independent of potential, not because the concentration of the reactant has been decreased to zero at the surface of the electrode, but because reaction H40 is only able to supply the reducible species, OX2, at a finite rate that is measured by this kinetic current. At more negative potentials, in some instances, the first oxidized species, OX1, can also be reduced, and so a second wave results. The second wave has a total current, I sub D, which is the diffusion-limited current determined by the total concentration of OX1 plus OX2 in the bulk of the solution. Examples of this kind of kinetically limited current in polarography are abundant. One class involves the reduction of keto acid anions, such as the anion of pyruvic acid, shown in equation H43. The pyruvate anion is more difficult to reduce than pyruvic acid, and so in solutions containing mixtures of pyruvate ion and pyruvic acid, two waves are observed, the first wave being a kinetically limited wave whose height is determined by the rate at which reaction H43 proceeds from left to right. The second wave, appearing at more negative potentials, corresponds to the direct reduction of pyruvate anion without prior protonation. Another example, shown in H44 and 45, involves the dissociation of the cadmium cyanide complex. The loss of the first cyanide of the cadmium cyanide complex is fast, but the second cyanide leaves the cadmium ion more slowly, and the complex containing two cyanides is the one that is reduced at the surface of the electrode. And in the presence of excess free cyanide, the net rate of reaction H45 becomes limiting, and a kinetic current is obtained in the polarogram. Many metal ion complexes show this general behavior. Finally, in H46, another class of cases which show this kind of kinetically limited behavior is indicated. namely the dehydration of aldehydes. In aqueous media, aldehydes exist in a hydrated dihydroxy form, as well as the usual aldehydic form. And in the hydrated form, the aldehydes are not reducible at any potential at the dropping electrode. But the unhydrated form can be reduced, and so the rate of conversion of the hydrated to the unhydrated form limits the magnitude of the current and gives rise to kinetic currents. Well, how does one decide whether a limiting current measured in a polarogram is a kinetic current or a simple diffusion-limited current? One standard method used to detect kinetic currents is to take advantage of the difference in the dependencies of the diffusion-limited current and kinetically-limited current on the height of the mercury reservoir above the capillary. And this difference in properties is summarized briefly, starting with equation H47. The rate of flow of mercury out of a capillary in a dropping mercury electrode, m, is determined by the pressure of mercury, which is measured by the height of the mercury above the capillary, signified by H in equation H47. The drop weight of a dropping mercury electrode is a constant. The drop grows to a constant size before gravity overcomes the interfacial tension which holds the drop to the capillary and it falls, so that the product of m, the rate of flow of mercury out of the capillary, and the drop time, the natural lifetime of the drop, is the drop weight, and it is constant, independent of the height of the mercury reservoir. Equation H48 says this symbolically. And you recall from the Yokovitch equation, H10, that the diffusion current at a dropping electrode is proportional to the rate of flow of mercury to the 2/3 power, and the drop time to the 1/6 power. If we make a recombination to take advantage of the fact that m times t is a constant, the diffusion current can be rewritten as in H49 in terms of m to the 1/2 and m times t to the 1/6. It follows, as shown in H50, that the diffusion current in the polarogram is directly proportional to the square root of the height of the mercury reservoir above the capillary. The little k's in all of these equations merely represent combinations of constants. Kinetic currents, on the other hand, have a different dependence on the mercury height. Namely, they're independent of the height of the mercury reservoir. This is because the kinetic current depends only on the area of the electrode, under commonly achieved conditions where the concentration of the more difficultly reduced species, OX1 in equation H40, is not changed significantly by the recording of the polarogram. Then the concentration gradient of OX1 is negligible, and the only factor governing the current is the area of the electrode. As the electrode gets bigger, the kinetic current gets bigger also. But the area of the electrode depends on the weight of the electrode to the 2/3 power, mt to the 2/3, as shown in equation H51. And since mt, the weight of the drop, is constant, the kinetic current will be independent of the height of the mercury reservoir above the capillary. Figure H52 shows this property graphically. If a limiting current, either a diffusion or kinetically limited current, is plotted as a function of the square root of the height of the mercury reservoir above the capillary, the straight line labeled A is obtained when the current is governed by the diffusion of the reactant to the drop, and the horizontal line B results when the current is limited entirely by the kinetics of a preceding chemical reaction. In some instances, the current is neither purely diffusional nor purely kinetically controlled. In these cases, curved lines lying between lines A and B in a graph such as the one in H52 result. But one standard method for determining whether or not an observed limiting current in a polarogram is governed by diffusion, and therefore obeys the Yokovitch equation, or by kinetics, and therefore does not obey the Yokovitch equation, is to inspect the dependence of the current on the height of the mercury reservoir above the capillary. independence implying kinetic control, and linear dependence on the square root of the height, signifying that the current is controlled by diffusion. A second method that is frequently used to test for kinetically controlled limiting currents is to inspect the temperature dependence of the current, as sketched in Figure H53. Diffusion-limited currents respond to temperature changes because of the temperature dependencies of several of the parameters in the Yoakovitch equation, especially the diffusion coefficients. Typically, diffusion-limited currents increase about 1.3 to 1.8% per degree. Kinetic currents are much more sensitive to temperature, however, because of the exponential dependence of most chemical reaction rates on temperature. Changes of over 50% per degree are known, and such extreme sensitivity to temperature changes is a clear indication of a kinetic current. In practice, some kinetic component to observed currents is to be suspected whenever temperature coefficients larger than 2 to 2.5% per degree are found in the range between 20 and 60 degrees centigrade.
Please turn to Side 9 for the continuation of this ACS audio course.